everyone email all the time. I want to say a note about the quizzes. Some people seem confused. Basically, what I do is I add up everything you got, every quiz you've taken that you've got points on, and that's your total. So I'm giving you the maximum number of points you can get out of 100. If you've already reached 100, for some of you have, some of you have gotten perfect score all the way across, that's up to you. You don't really have to take any more quizzes, but you've made 100. The only thing is you won't get more than 100 points. So there's 125 possible points if you work here 4 days or left here a month off or whatever. You still have the chance to get to the 100 gold points. So for most of you, the quizzes are really going to help you, even if you're not getting 5 on all of them, because generally, when we add them all up, they make a pretty good contribution to your grade. And remember, the 100 points then is the same as an exam total. So out of 500 for the whole course, 100 points come from the quizzes. And then the last 100 points will be from exam 4 coming up a week from Wednesday. So basically, I add them straight across. You have the maximum chance to get 100. There's 125 possible points, so if you miss a few, you still have a chance to get 100. And again, some of you already have 100 point total. If you keep track and you know that, you don't have to take the quiz with us. It's you. That'll hurt you, though.
How can we find out?
You have to know if you kept track of them. Otherwise, you'll have to wait and see at the end. But you have an idea, most of you, of how you're doing. So we're going to talk about languages today. Before we do that, I want to set up a couple of things and talk about the enzyme, not the enzyme, the hormones that are being sold us, and then put it into the big picture of where we are in terms of all of this. So, we talked about insulin and glucagon.
Thank you.
Oops, G1, P5? G6? Okay.
Okay, so the big picture of where we're gonna look at today is we're gonna look at glycogen turning into glucose 1 phosphate. Whoops, this should be moved now. And we can't do anything with glucose 1 phosphate, as we know.
Yeah, that was my question. Okay.
So basically, glycogen is our storage form for glucose, and we basically break it down into an intermediate compound that will be today glucose 1 phosphate. It's a lot like glucose 6 phosphate, which is our key intermediate. It just needs a mutate to basically move the phosphate group from carbon number 1 to carbon number 6. And that enzyme is called glucomutase, so that's a fairly simple step. But the key intermediate in the glycogen pathway will be glucose 1 phosphate, and then it goes to glucose 6 phosphate. Glucose 6 phosphate, remember, is one of our key intermediates, along with pyruvate and acetyl-CoA. So our goal is to get to glucose 6 phosphate, which then goes directly away through glycolysis pathway to pyruvate, which we've seen. Pyruvate to acetyl-CoA through the PBH, and then acetyl-CoA goes around the citric acid cycle, producing CO2, but more importantly, energy. Energy in the form of NADH, FADH2, and GTP. So energy is the key for the citric acid cycle. If you're following the carbons, it comes off as CO2. So again, the key enzymes that we'll see today, and I'm gonna write down what the take-home about these enzymes is, will be the phosphorylase and the synthase. And basically, glycogen phosphorylase will be the enzyme that catalyzes glycogen going to glucose 1 phosphate, and glycogen synthase takes it the other way, takes glucose 1 phosphate to glycogen. Notice that the only two cell types where we can actually go from glucose 6 phosphate to glucose are the liver and the kidney. So all of our other tissues, all of our other cells, we use the glucose 6 phosphate as the key to go into the glycogen pathway. And it's all of those other metabolic pathways that are in our big picture slide, as we know glucose 6 phosphate being the important intermediate in those pathways. So again, the only thing, two cells are hepatocytes and kidney cells that can actually convert that glucose 6 phosphate directly to glucose. The enzyme there would be glucose 6 phosphatase. Notice we have an abbreviation for that, and we're gonna have to write out phosphatase as pase, glucose 6 pase. Glucose 6 pase, that's an enzyme, AFE. Glucose 6 phosphatase. So again, this is where we are in the big picture, and then on Wednesday, we're gonna talk about the reverse, which is not a direct reverse, but almost, of glycolysis. We're gonna go from pyruvate and a couple of other compounds back up to glucose 6 phosphate. Glucose 6 phosphate, again, a key intermediate. Now remember also, again, when we're talking about the two pathways today, genesis or creation will be when glucose levels are high, when insulin is present, and that'll be the hormone that controls overall glycogen benefits. And when we break down glycogen to use our stored glucose, that'll be when the hormone glucagon is present and when the plasma glucose levels are particularly low. That's when we break down our stores of glycogen. So remember again, though, the key to the citric acid cycle is energy. And on Monday, you will see NADH-FADH2 become ATP, which we know is our main source of energy. So let's do with ventilin glucagon. And that's a picture of hormones which control all these different pathways. Before we get into talking about what is the phosphorylated form, what is the dephosphorylated form, which gets a little complex, we can make sense out of it in saying that if we have a lot of glucose 6 phosphate around, probably means we also have a lot of glucose around, we're in a high energy state, insulin will be present, we want to store for times when things are not plentiful. So we want to activate the synthase so we can create glycogenesis, create glycogen. Before we even look at the complexity of the thing, big picture, does things on the fed or fasting state, and whether glucose levels are high or low in our plasma, or how all of this is basically controlled. So glycogen, this is kind of what it looks like. If you haven't noticed, you don't need to know the structure of it. You can see there's two types of linkages, a 1,4 and a 1,6. There's a lot more 1,4 than 1,6 linkages. 1,4 is basically a huge long polymer glucose molecule. And the 1,6 linkages are branches. So you kind of see how it branches off. And the pieces that we break off when we want to light glucose glycogenolysis are pieces of branches. So we basically leave the main polymer, the big chain of glycogen, we leave it alone too much. The 1,4 linkages stay together and we break off the branches. And we actually go through a couple of intermediate sugars as we break it down and going from glycogen to glucose 1 phosphate to glucose 6 phosphate. There's some intermediate larger sugars in there that you don't need to worry about. But this is kind of what it looks like. And again, it's a simple polymer. Consists of glucose to the N plus 1. It's glucose after glucose after glucose all joined together. So that's how we're storing our carbohydrate, which remember, we're storing when glucose levels are high, when insulin is around, when things are plentiful. Then we can break it down when we need it. So there it is, stored glycogen. So here's the stored glycogen. And the very first step is the enzyme that we're interested in the pathway, the glycogen phosphorylase, which with the aid of the phosphate from the inorganic phosphate pool, phosphorylates the little piece of glucose that breaks off and makes glucose 1 phosphate. Now, of course, glucose 1-phosphate is not an intermediate we recognize. It's not our key intermediate that we've been talking about, which is glucose 6-phosphate. So we need phosphoglucomutase to move that phosphate group from the one carbon to the 6th carbon. Then the rest of the picture is kind of what I have on the board. You've got glycolysis going on, which we went through all the steps from glucose 6-phosphate to pyruvate. There's the pyruvate dehydrogenase complex giving us acetyl-CoA. There's acetyl-CoA going to CO2, which is the citric acid cycle. But again, the CO2 is less consequential than the NADH, FADH2, and the GTP, which we'll see on Monday, are energy. And of course, we always have also lactate dehydrogenase turning some of the pyruvate, which is another key intermediate, into lactate. Then notice you've got your glucose 6-phosphatase, or G6-pase. That's the enzyme, remember, that converts glucose 6-phosphate into glucose. But it's very, very specific only to liver and kidney. So the majority of our cell types in our tissues are going to be using the glucose 6-phosphate. And again, if you look back at your really big picture, it's a key in a lot of the different pathways, not just carbohydrates, but also fats and protein pathways, glucose 6-phosphate, key intermediate. So the phosphorylase is the enzyme that is the big one that does the first step, so it's going to take branches of the glycogen and break it down into glucose 1-phosphate molecules. It's a complex enzyme. It's got a couple of binding sites. The main binding site is for glycogen, of course, and for inorganic phosphate. It's got a cofactor for your gonadal phosphate. And it's got an allosteric activator and three allosteric inhibitors, which we already hinted at here on the board. The allosteric activator, again, will be AMP. We've seen that before. Tells us signals of low energy, so signals we need to increase plasma glucose because we need to increase glycolysis and all of those metabolic pathways that give us energy. So AMP is an activator. The other three all signal high energy, and they signal that we really don't need to break down glycogen at this time. Those are ATP, glucose, glucose 6-phosphate. Now they don't work quite that simply, unfortunately, in this enzyme because it's an incredibly complex enzyme and hard in a two-dimensional way using an overhead or looking at the paper to show you kind of how this enzyme is set up. It's got an active and an inactive form. It's called AMP. You don't need to worry about the AMP stuff. But the regulation is very complex, and the reason it's complex is because the body absolutely does not want to undergo glycogenolysis or break down glycogen when it does not absolutely need to. The glycogen is an emergency store of sugar, and we know that sugar, glucose is key for the brain, for the red blood cells, for the liver, for a lot of our organelles to keep them functioning, to produce energy for our bodies. So we want to ensure that it actually remains stored until we need it for glucose homeostasis, so that's plasma glucose homeostasis levels to keep the concentration where it needs to be. So the regulation is complex, and again, there is a phosphorylated and a dephosphorylated form. And the phosphorylated form of the enzyme basically exists as a safety valve. If you look at it that way, it makes more sense. And glucose affects the phosphorylated form of the enzyme. And glucose being around in high enough concentration basically ensures that this enzyme remains tense and inactive. So glucose inactivates the phosphorylated form. Part of it is basically the reason it had two forms is it had to do with the time lag, which is very, very short. But you'll notice for the enzyme to be phosphorylated, you need to use ATP, and as our high energy phosphate donor, it donates the phosphate group to the enzyme. So not having to wait for that, if there's any time such that our glucose concentrations are high enough, so we want to ensure we're not getting glycogen all of the, then glucose itself inactivates the phosphorylated half of the enzyme. Then the other part of the enzyme is controlled by ATP and glucose-6-phosphate and by AMP. And so as we have on the board then, ATP and glucose-6-phosphate, again, signals that energy is high enough. We don't need to break down our stores. We have enough glucose. We have enough energy. And both of those make the enzyme tense or inactive. And AMP is the only compound that is our, again, common allosteric activator. And it is an allosteric activator that's signaling low energy. So let's break down glycogen. And it can take the enzyme from tense to relaxed, which means active. And we saw these forms, tense and relaxed, when we talked about hemoglobin. Hemoglobin, when it had oxygen bound, would be relaxed. When it didn't have oxygen, it would be tense. It's the same kind of thing here. When the enzyme is tense, it doesn't tend to be active. When it relaxes, it is active. So again, it's very very complicated enzyme, but the key is that it can be rapidly activated and inactivated in response to hormonal signals without having to wait for phosphorylation, dephosphorylation. And the key compounds, the key inactivators are glucose, ATP, and glucose-6-phosphate, and the activator is AMP, so we can activate those guys with AMP. So this is breaking it down, breaking it down. Now what happens when we've eaten? And so we have high plasma glucose levels. There's lots of glucose around. Our brain is using it. Our red blood cells are using it. Our liver is using it right away without waiting for insulin. So they're insulin insensitive. They're using the glucose. At the same time, the pancreas is aware that glucose levels are high and it begins to produce insulin. That allows all our other tissues, so adipose, muscles, pretty much everything else, to also partake in the glucose and begin uptake of glucose and using it for all the different pathways. Well, at the same time all of that's going on, the body also wants to store some of it, add it to the polymer of glycogen that we already have, and it does that with glycogen synthase. That's the primary enzyme. There'll be a few more enzymes that we'll see here. And the pathway there, of course, is called glycogenesis, or creation of glycogen. And again, what's going to be around in terms of hormones now is the insulin. So glucose, we know it's converted to glucose-6-phosphate, and general enzyme is hexokinase. Remember, it's found in pretty much all mammal cells. It's not specific. The phosphorylase is hexoses. And that's different than glucokinase, which you remember we talked about, but I call it specific to liver or hepatocytes. So here's hexokinase, phosphorylated glucose. Same as we've seen, the energy donor, the phosphate donor is ATP. So we now have glucose-6-phosphate. The mutase converts the glucose-6-phosphate to glucose-1-phosphate again, which is our intermediate. And then the glucose-1-phosphate is basically turned into glycogen through glycogen synthase. And it looks very complex. It's another one of these biochemical reactions where we actually have a nucleotide derivative. And basically, UDP itself to glucose and the kind of circular mechanism that goes on. But the keys are that the synthase is converting N number of glucoses to glucose N plus 1, which is just a shorthand way of drawing a polymer. So glucose at the end means one unit, glucose at the N plus 1 is many glucose units, so it's the polymer. This is glycogen. So glucose to the N plus 1 is glycogen. That's the polymer of glucose. And again, the synthase is really the key. And again, it's another example of a biochemical reaction using a nucleotide derivative. So the synthase, again, is complex, kind of like the phosphorylase, but not quite as complex as the phosphorylase. It's got an active and an inactive form, and they have names I and D, I meaning independent and D dependent. And what they're independent and dependent on is the molecule glucose 6 phosphate. And you'll notice when we have high enough levels, plasma levels of glucose 6 phosphate, we activate the phosphorylated form of the enzyme. And again, glucose 6-phosphate being around is the signal to the enzyme that glucose is in high concentrations. It is good times in the fed state. We have a lot. We want to store and keep that stored until we really need it. And how do we store it? We store it as glycogen, as a polymer. So the glucose 6-phosphate is really the key activator of glycogen synthase. And again, the difference between the phosphorylated and the dephosphorylated, you don't need to get too involved in, but it has to do, again, with the kind of time mechanism and complexity of having to phosphorylate something and having to wait for that to occur. We don't have to wait. It's already phosphorylated, it's tense, it's inactive, it goes to relaxed active through the presence of glucose 6 phosphate. So again, the activation and inactivation are really complex. And next semester, we're going to take a look at them in much more detail and tie them into what's called allosteric regulation of all the pathways, the carbohydrate pathways that come together. And fructose kinase 1 and 2 will become involved as well. But again, the take home, the one particular things that you really need to know are on the board. And those, again, are the allosteric activators and inactivators and goals of the enzyme. The homework is not going to be available until Wednesday, so if you can't live with that, you're actually going to have to have it today. And basically, we need to pick it back up and turn it in Wednesday. So if you don't care, which is probably most of you, then I will bring it to class on Wednesday. But if you want it tonight and Tuesday, you can keep it and get it back to me on Wednesday.